All right. This is hour number two of our New Year's Day celebration here on Let's Talk Hookup. Very happy you're joining us on New Year's Day. Hope your 2023 is going to be fantastic, and it means lots of good fishing and enjoyment for you. Hope you're spending it with some family and friends today and enjoying the day. And thanks for joining us here on Let's Talk Hookup. Hey, next up, we have Tony Reyes Jr. and Eric Miller from the Longfin. Tony Reyes Jr., of course, took over for his dad, the famous Tony Reyes. Really fantastic guy. We loved having Tony on the show. But Tony runs the boat now, and they do these fantastic six-day Sea of Cortez trips down that are all booked out of the Longfin and Orange. So this is from March 25th, 2010. It was actually during the Fred Hall Del Mar show. We have Tony Reyes Jr. and Eric Miller from the Longfin. Please enjoy.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup on XX 1090. And, man, it's going to be a fun show today.
Yes, indeed.
Good info coming
fun
today.
Fun show here and then a fun show all day up at the Del Mar Fairgrounds. The last day of the year, Fred Hall Del Mar from 10 to 6 today.
I just can't believe that the show's already over. You know, I mean, it's such
it's not over yet.
That's true. That's very good.
Got a full
good,
day today.
Yeah. After today,
after
I won't
today.
Believe that it's over.
Then it's season's done and time to go fishing.
Season's nothing, man. It's, yeah, it's like you say, it's go time. It's yellowtail to be had.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Both above and below the border.
But a big day today, and it's all going to end with a live broadcast you're going to hear right here on XX 1090 for the big Friends of Rollo special edition. So I want to thank Bart Hall for putting that together. He's sponsoring that, and the people here at XX 1090 for helping us out. Our guy Head on the board there is coming in special this morning as well as tonight to monitor that deal. And, of course, Dick Warren, our engineer extraordinaire, along with Isaiah, is going to be there 5 to 6 p.m. at the Del Mar Fairgrounds tonight. XX 1090, if you can't, come down to listen to see if you can win that boat, that Davis boat, or the $25,000 in cash, or the Ford F-150 pickup, 5 to 6 p.m. tonight. Don't forget, buy your tickets. You still have a chance to come down to the Del Mar Fairgrounds and buy your tickets today to get in on that draw. Are you in, Rick?
I'm in heavy this
You're
year.
Heavy?
I need that boat. I need that Davis this time.
I'm in pretty heavy, too. So everybody's coming up like, you can't win. I go, well, why not?
I'm taking it home this
year. Yeah.
I'm due. I'm totally due.
Do you have a problem with saying, and the winner is Rick Baxter?
Not only do I not have a problem, I've been practicing it. I mean, I've been practicing this for weeks now.
Yeah?
Which I'm figuring out how my face is going to look when I'm driving home that new Davis boat. Like, I'm ready.
What about when you say the winner is Pete Gray?
It won't be quite as cool. I mean, it'll be cool, don't get me wrong, but it won't be quite as good. It's going to be fun. Yeah, we have a good time out there, and it's cool to see everybody. And like you say, it's so exciting knowing that you have an opportunity at, just an amazing, amazing deal with the Davis or the brand new F-150 or $25,000 in cash, or there are other dozens of awesome prizes. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. So if you have a chance, come down to the show because it is an exciting time because we have a lot of other prizes there, full hour from 5 to 6 p.m. that we're going to be doing the prize drawings. And then, of course, all the grand prize drawing right there near the end of the show. But we're going to have interviews with a lot of the people that make Friends of Rollo possible. Maybe get some real special guests on the show tonight.
Yeah.
5 to 6 p.m. right here on XX 1090. Or better, come on down to the show. It's going to be in the Davis Boats display, which is the O'Brien building, right? Am I correct?
I believe so.
Yeah, which is the big building right after you first come in where all the boats are. And it's going to be on the Rollo boat once again.
Cool.
And then, which is right next to my boat, which is parked right next to the Rollo boat there, my new Davis boat right there. So come check us out. And handily, the bar is right next door.
Well, there you go.
So, we can just, belly up to the bar there and watch the scene going on.
It's
going to
be a lot of fun.
It's going to be very – have you been up to that building?
I haven't. Believe it or not, this is my day. Sunday is going to be my day to get to cruise the show. I've gotten to go along the tackle area pretty well and got to go outside and see some of the, see the dock dogs and see some of the cool stuff that's going on outside. But I haven't had a chance to go check out all the boats yet. But I hear it's really good looking up above. So I'm looking forward to it.
It's a great show. And the Maxa family has been all in for us for the show. I want to thank your dad, the Codfather, of course, and your sister. Everybody comes by the booth, our booth. I don't know if you buy our booth, Tony, or not. Says, who's that hot chick in your booth? That's Calico Carly.
Yeah, they're all.
That's Rick's sister.
T-shirt salesperson extraordinaire.
Yeah. Calico Carly's been doing a great job in there.
Cool.
Been real helping, of course, Iron Man himself, Gary White, has been here for the weekend, too, so I want to thank him, too. So thanks to the Maxa family and, of course, Gary White for helping us out in our Let's Talk hookup booth. We'll be back in there today. And, hey, great to have in the studio Tony Reyes, Jr. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning.
What's up, Tony?
Hey, great to have you, Tony. And Eric from the Long, from Eric Miller, great to have you. It's been quite a few years.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, everybody.
Yeah, indeed. So, Tony, you've been at the show every day. Been a good show for you guys?
That's good. Yeah, we're going to have a good show. We just finished our Long Beach show, too, and we had a good show.
Yeah, it was excellent. And you have your son in there, too, Tony the Third.
Yeah, he's, my son is the first time he coming.
How old is he?
Yeah, he's 11 years old.
11 years cool. old. Yeah. Is he going to be the next driver of the boat?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely. You started with your, there. I see pictures of your dad, and, of course, we lost your dad last year at the age of 84, right?
He was 86 years
86.
Old. 86.
Yeah, incredible guy, and, boy, we miss him. I know you do, and we miss him. And so many great times here on Let's Talk Hookup with Tony, and his character was just so fantastic and just adored the guy. He's just a fantastic guy. And he started you fishing. How old were you?
I was like 7 years old when he started to take me in the trips.
Yeah.
You know, after that I went to the school and.
You went to the maritime school?
No.
Yeah.
It was in Mexico.
Oh, okay, Mexico school.
And then I go every vacation and the trips. I like those trips.
Yeah. And that was on the Jose Andres.
Yeah, no. The different boats long time ago.
Different uh-huh. boats. So do you remember the first boat you went on?
Yeah, we were at the shrimp boats, you know, the old boats.
Shrimp boats.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He rents shrimp boats and has no bunks, you know, you sleep outside and, and you know, no showers.
Yeah.
Small kitchens, but a lot of fish, you know, and we had a good time and I learned a lot of things from those trips, too.
Yeah. That's and cool. When did the Jose Andres come into?
The Jose Andres, they were built the Jose Andres at the 1986.
And then.
It was a lot better boat, you know.
Oh, yeah.
With bunks, showers, and kitchen, and nice pangas, and everything, you know.
Come a long way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And then the next step now, Jose Andres is still in. It's still operating, but now you have the Tony Reyes.
Uh-huh, now we got the Tony Reyes, and it's a lot bigger boat and nicer. And
it's a beautiful boat.
Yeah, and then we take more people in that boat.
Yeah. State rooms. How many pangas on the boat?
We got 9 pangas in that boat.
Yeah. 3 people per panga maximum?
3 people and 1 guy, and we got bunks for 30 people, big kitchen, and we can go all over.
So, Eric, what's the average load that you take on like the Tony Reyes?
Oh, it pretty much goes full.
Goes
pretty
full.
Much every week.
Yeah.
It runs pretty full.
30
capacity.
People. And 20, I've been on 27. There. 26.
27, yeah.
27 is the maximum capacity.
Nine pongas, 3 fishermen per
oh,
ponga.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been on it when it's full, and there's plenty of room.
Right.
There's no lack of space. Now, how many do you take on the Jose Andres?
Jose's 18.
18
6 pongas.
People. 6 pongas.
Right.
So that's nice, too. And staterooms and bunks.
Right.
My first trip with Tony Reyes was with a group, you probably remember, Lester Knapp from Palomar College.
Mm-hmm.
And many, many years ago, I went on an ecology trip, believe it or not, when
really?
I was in school. Yeah. I was even younger than you, hard to believe. and I went on the Jose Andres and had just a great time. Of course, it was an ecology trip, in quotes. We fished most of the time.
Okay.
I was
going
to
say, I don't know about all this.
You know, and we got class credit for it. That was the great thing about it, too. But we got to fish most of the time, tour those islands, which were just beautiful, and see the birds on Rasa and just amazing sights there on there. And then, of course, about 4 years ago with Del Marsh, I got to go on the Tony Reyes. And, wow, that was just a great trip, of course, with our late friend Del Marsh, and just unbelievable yellowtail surface iron fishing. Just it's a pretty spectacular trip.
Yeah.
So, Tony, what's the seasons? You start up next month, right?
Yes, we start in next April 25th through October in the Mitre Islands.
The Mitre Islands.
Uh-huh, and then...
Which is kind of your staple. That's what you guys are famous for, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
And what do you catch in the Mitre Islands?
We catch yellowtails, cabrilla, red snapper, white sea bass, broomtail grouper, black white sea bass, sheephead, all kind of, you know.
That's cool.
Fish.
Now, we had a question yesterday about tortuava. Are there still tortuava in the Sea of Cortez?
Yeah, there's a lot of tortuavas there, but, you know, we are not allowed to catch those.
Catch and release, right?
You know.
You have to release them if you catch them.
Yeah, if you catch one, you got to release it, and then you got to wait. They're working on the permits. They might open soon, you know, for fishing.
Season. Yeah.
In a few years.
I've seen pictures of your dad with 100-pound tortuava on the beach. Are those still around?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Yeah, they are still around there. And we have we've been catching, you know, sometimes a few of those, but we got to release, and it's a shame, you know, because they died and nobody, you know.
They die anyway?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's a shame. Yeah. Is it easy to tell a tortuava from a white sea bass?
Yeah, you see the difference. It's very easy by the tail, the head.
The tail and the head?
The color, the head, the scales.
Yeah. They have like a rounded tail, right? They have tortuavas too? Tail,
yeah. And the scales are different too, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the head is different.
Uh-huh.
The tail and... You know, the body, you know. You
That's
can see
cool.
the difference.
Yeah.
So what islands do you fish down there? Or do you fish the mainland or the Baja coast, too? During the Midriff Island trips.
Oh, we fish all the islands and the La Guardia. We fish Ras Island. We fish Partida. We fish San Lorenzo, San Esteban, all the L.A. Bay area. Most of the islands we fish, and the coast, too.
On the coast.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a mothership operation, so the Jose Andres and the Tony Reyes are the motherships, and then you fish every day from the pangas, right?
Yeah, we have the boat like a mothership, and we use the pangas to go fishing out, you know, every day. Go out and get up very early in the morning, get breakfast, and go out fishing about 6 in the morning, come back about 11, and get lunch, and we might move the boat during the lunchtime.
A little siesta, maybe?
Little siesta, little cerveza. And then we go fishing in our place for the afternoon, you know?
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's a great trip. Remember the Campo San Nicolas thing?
Yeah, sure.
Of course. How could you forget that? It's kind of like Campo San Nicolas, but better, because you're on a boat and you go to different places and you're not sleeping in tents. You're actually sleeping in a nice bunk and on the boat and stuff like that. But you're going to all these remote, incredible destinations that are just unbelievable.
An epic yellowtail fishing. Like, how does it possibly get better than that?
And Cabrilla. And you catch the white sea bass, like I said, big black sea bass sometimes, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, is it all a jig fishing thing, or is there live bait fishing as well, or how does that work for the trips?
We did both. Jig fishing, live bait, cut bait, and trolling. We troll, you know, feathers, mirror lures.
Right. Used to be years ago that it was all jig fishing, but over the last 10, 15 years or so, really, the live bait fishing really has evolved.
Yeah.
You know, so where that's kind of, now it's like if we don't get much live bait, oh, we didn't get any live bait on this trip, you know.
Right.
Is it mackerel?
It's mackerel.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah.
And I remember the old picture of Dell swimming in the bait tank. If you can keep guys out of the bait tank, it's in really, you're in really good shape.
Wow, it was great hearing Tony and talking about those Sea of Cortez trips on the Tony Reyes down there. Hey, next up, a blast from the past. This show's from June 14th, 2015, so not that long ago, 7 or 8 years ago. Dr. Larry Allen, the scientific fisherman there. And always great hearing Larry and all his knowledge that he gave us from Let's Talk Hookup and all the guys that he associated with over there at Cal State Northridge. He spent a lot of time talking about black sea bass on this episode, this first segment that we're going to hear here. So please enjoy Dr. Larry Allen from June 14th, 2015.
Right.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup on the Mighty 1090. Pete Gray here. As I said, Rock God Rick Max is on his way to Sitka, Alaska for our Kingfisher Charters trip. It's going to be a great trip, and I know there's going to be a lot of happy, happy anglers going up there because king salmon fishing has been good, and they're going to catch a lot of big halibut and rockfish and all kinds of good stuff. So be anxious to hear the reports next weekend from Rick. Hey, we have a great guest in the studio. It's been a while, our good buddy, Dr. Larry Allen. We call him the scientific fisherman. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Pete. Hey. Nice to be back.
Great to have you back. And, man, you have been a busy guy. Of course, you're still the big guy up at Cal State Northridge, right?
Yeah, I'm the chairman of the Department of Biology, so I got 40 faculty that I have to ride herd on. Herding cats is what it's called.
How big is Cal State Northridge now?
It's the biggest CSU. We got about 40,000 students.
40,000 students. Yeah. Wow. That's amazing.
Big campus, and we've been growing, so.
Yeah. And biology is a big department, and especially you kind of do a lot in the fisheries world.
Well, yeah, we actually have a really strong marine biology program at Northridge, and I have been working on, sport fish, for a long time there. I spent a lot of time dragging nets in my early years, for fish, and then I decided I just wanted to start catching them on rod and reel again. So but for the last 25 years, we've been working on the sport fish that everybody likes to catch here in the coastal waters.
And the cool thing about you is that you are a fisherman. You were showing me pictures of big trout from Pyramid and about catching offshore species and inshore species and everything,
yeah,
right?
I've pretty much caught them all. Yeah, my dad and grandfather started me at 5 and been on the ocean pretty much ever since. The reason I basically became a marine biologist and a fish specialist.
So let me ask you this. I mean, there seems to be a lot of people kind of going into the anti-fishing world and then coinciding in the scientific world about anti-fishing or anti-sport fishing in particular. Do you run into a lot of that at school?
I don't personally. We see it. We there are colleagues of mine that would rather hug trees than face the reality that this is fishing is a resource.
Yeah.
Fishes are a resource, and they're used for food, they're used for recreation, and it's part of the hunting culture, I think, in human society. And I don't believe that a hook in a fish is the same as a hook in a Labrador Retriever. Let's just put that
yeah,
it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, pretty ridiculous indeed. And properly managed, of course.
Absolutely, managed for sustainability. That's what I'm all about.
Yeah.
And when we see problems, we say something. You know, the basses, the calico and the sand bass regulations that came through, about 3 years ago, I had a fairly large part in that, and it cost me some friendships, I think. But I think it's now, this is the bag limit of 5 and 14 inches. Now we're seeing a fishery that is really, really going to be great in the next two or 3 years.
And I myself, too, was very, very in favor of that 5 fish and the 14 inches. And now, a lot of screaming and yelling about it, and, oh, my God, we're going to put us out of business and everything, but we've seen the results.
Well, the results are, we knew it would work. It's just a bitter pill to swallow.
Yeah.
And now you catch 5 fish, and the fillets are way more than the 10 fish you caught before.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you get to catch a lot more fish.
Yeah.
And catch and release fishery.
Yeah.
And
they're all nice fish. Bass with shoulders, we call them.
Yeah. Now, speaking of fish, have you worked with Lyle Bellquist on his work?
Lyle's a friend of mine. I've known him since he was an undergrad in Long Beach and back at the Fred Hall shows all those years ago. So he's a friend. I collaborate with him, help him any way I can. He's doing some great stuff with the Collaborative Fisheries Research
Program.
Yeah,
he has. And he's done some amazing work with showing how healthy that calico bass population
is. Yeah, and comparing it to the protected area at La Jolla that hasn't been fished for a long time versus, outside, and it's getting pretty good everywhere.
Yeah, that's the good thing. Now when we can show that the protected areas are just as good as the areas that we're fishing.
Well, that was the original idea, is that these protected areas would seed the other areas. I don't know. It's probably still too early to show that directly, but we've known for a long time. I've even had students that worked on it at Catalina, at the Wrigley Marine Science Center, that reserve that's been there for a long time. We know that if you close an area to hook and line fishing, commercial fishing, you get a lot bigger fish and a lot bigger calicos and a lot bigger sheephead. Those were the two main ones. So we know that, but we didn't really know what kind of seeding effect there would be around it, besides the spillover effect.
when calico bass are in a population like a marine reserve, the adult calicos, the mature calicos, are they staying right there or are they moving around?
They're pretty much staying there. You know, most of the tagging work has been done on calicos or kelp bass. And sand basses, that they don't move very far. The sand bass will migrate out to their spawning aggregation areas, but it's, you know, average fish is moving 5 kilometers, you know, so it's the larvae that get up into the currents, that's what spreads them around. Yeah. So these are all egg broadcast spawners. They release their eggs and sperm into the water. The larvae develop as part of the plankton, and they can go anywhere. We're finding a lot of them return to the native grounds because of current patterns and things like that. But they can go elsewhere, and that's kind of the main thrust of the whole MPA system. And I have maintained that we've never really shown that happens.
Yeah.
But the whole MPA thing was a highly politically charged process. Yeah.
And so are you in favor of MPAs? Are you... mixed about it?
I'm mixed. I'm not a big fan because I didn't think we had done the research, the basic empirical research necessary to show that they were going to benefit us like people thought. There's been a lot of modeling. They're modeling. It should work. But, you know, you've got to have empirical data and ground truth these things. So that's the reason I was kind of lukewarm on it. I was on the scientific advisory team about that, and there were two fishermen on that, and there were two of 20.
And the rest were all what?
Well, they were labs working on aka black sea bass. Okay. I don't call them black sea bass.
The proper name is giant sea bass.
Yeah. They're not black. And they're not sea bass.
What are they?
They are wreckfish. They are related to the wreckfish of the Atlantic that are a big sport fish and food fish. They're deep ocean reef fishes, you know, and they get fairly big.
So wreckfish would be the same as Florida grouper?
No, they're not groupers. Groupers are groupers, and they're very different from the giants.
They are.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They're not very closely related at all. They just look a lot like them, and they act a lot like them.
Interesting. So tell us about your work with black sea bass. I mean, everybody's thinking, you know, because we're catching them now and stuff, that they've really made a comeback. You stunned me this morning with the numbers and how small the numbers are in Southern
California. Well, we have been able to work on them, and it's the first time in my lifetime that there's been enough of them to do something about. And so we're actually going out and finding out where the babies are, and we're counting them around Catalina. We're looking at their behavior and a variety of other things. But one of the things that we started doing 5 years ago was that I started buying heads from fish markets. You know, commercial landings are still legal. One fish per trip.
One fish per trip.
One giant
commercial net.
Yeah, one giant sea bass or black per boat.
How do they get away with that?
Well,
game allow that?
Well, that's in the law that was written when the moratorium came into being in 1982. They originally had two fish per trip. Now it's one incidental take. So they can be landed. They can be marketed. And so I decided that I would just start buying the heads if they had them. Because most of the time, 150 years of giant sea bass fishery, I still have to, they were landing these huge fish without their guts or their heads, you know, because these take up too much room on the boats.
Sure.
So we didn't learn anything about them. We didn't know anything about them because fishery scientists need guts and gonads and heads and otoliths and things like that. So I started getting these. We got up to 64 of them, and started sectioning the otoliths, and we had now determined that the largest or the oldest giant sea bass, black sea bass that we know of is 76
years old. 76 years old.
They were thought to maybe be over 100, you know.
Yeah.
But really, most of the really big ones, about 500 pounders that we estimate from the size of the head, are between 60 and 76 years old.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
So, not very many of them. But we also were able, with those skulls, to take tissues and do genetic assays of them, and one of the things that we're able to find out is that they're very low genetic diversity. They look like they went through a huge bottleneck
because of the low catches.
They collapsed in 1934 in California waters.
1934
as they fished them out of California waters.
So that was was it commercial as well as sport fishing?
That was mainly commercial.
Commercial fishing.
Yeah, the days when, you know, Zane Grey and Holdridge and these guys were out there at Catalina in the 1890s catching them with
rod and reel.
Rod and reel. Before that, with rope, you know, with parachute cord. And then the gill netters discovered them in the teens, in the 1910s. And by 34, they had virtually fished them out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we have very low catches in California. Most of the fish were landed between 1934 and 1982 from Mexico going down. And then the Mexico, banned us from taking them in Mexico. So then it really fell off. And then they declared the moratorium for fishing, recreational fishing in 1982.
So you cannot recreationally catch a giant sea bass, black sea bass, in Mexican waters.
Oh, you can.
You can.
No, but American fishermen, commercial fishermen can't go down there. Commercial fishermen.
Yeah, commercial fishermen. But recreational fishermen.
They can't land them from there, let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, it is a moratorium here in the United States, so in California.
In California.
What is the area that they cover? Where do we see black sea bass, giant sea bass?
Well, they're coastally oriented, rather deep most of the year, looks like. They come up. We're seeing the spawning aggregations in the summer now in about 50 to 70 feet of water. So they're fairly deep, almost, fairly cooler water fishes. And they do have aggregation sites that we've heard of historically. Mike Domeyer, when he was with the Flager Institute, was working on them and tagging them. We don't have that data available to us at this point, but they are. There's a Anacapa, Catalina has a couple of aggregations. We now know ocean sites. We know where they are, and that's where they used to fish them. Mm-hmm. And they fish them most heavily in the summer when they're spawning and they're aggregated. And whenever you fish an aggregating species, one that aggregates to spawn in particular,
like sand bass,
you can really decimate the populations quickly, and that's what happens
recreationally.
Recreationally, probably over many, many years. I think the sand bass had that happen in 2003-2004. They're starting to come back. We also had cold water. Yeah, we had a lot of cold water between 99 and 2010. We only had one
conditions.
More year. Yeah, conditions.
So the
for recruitment, for development of the babies, yeah.
You were it staggered me in the numbers of black sea bass, giant sea bass, from Anacapa Island to San Felipe and around the Baja Peninsula, 2,000 miles of coastline. How many fish do you think are in that?
Well, genetically, there's a test we can run based on the diversity of the nucleotide sequences. It's called effective population size. You can calculate that, and it's really low for giants. So one of the estimates was 160. We
160
think
fish?
Yeah, 160, but maybe 500 is a better estimate with the air. 500 spawning adult females, that's not very many.
No,
that's
spawning adult females.
Yeah.
And what's the are there equal number of males?
Probably. There's more males, probably, because we're seeing, of course, they pair off. We do know that they form pair bonds when they spawn, which is very different from groupers. But if you get it in an area where there's a lot of them, there's a lot of smaller males wandering around and booming at each other. They produce sound and stuff.
So. Booming.
Yeah,
explain
they boom.
That. Yeah.
Well, they have swim bladders. They're very large swim bladders, and we now know that they have muscles on their ribs, and their ribs are highly pivot. They pivot. In the sockets on the vertebra, and they can, with these muscles, they simply contract them, and they thump the drum. They thump their swim bladder.
It's like a drum.
It's like a drum.
Yeah.
It's like, that's what, we've got hydrophones out there, and we're trying to isolate and localize it.
Get the sound.
But the guy,
maybe a new ringtone for you.
Yeah. Boom. Yeah. But my divers will be out there, and they'll be observing, pairs or whatever, and they'll hear a boom in the water. And they'll turn around. There usually will be a male charging them.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, they get that aggressive?
Yeah, they get, the males get pretty aggressive.
Always fun talking to Dr. Larry Allen, that is for sure. And next up, Jimmy Kingsmill, Captain Jimmy Kingsmill. He was part of the Dream Team, of course, from Bad Company, Steve Lasley, Pete Grokspeck, and Jim Kingsmill. He also is a binoculars expert, too, and he's the Fraser Volpe gyro binoculars expert. He talks a lot about having the importance of having those Fraser Volpe binoculars and all that. Also in this segment, too, you'll hear the famous Don from Team Baracho and when he won the Dorado Shootout. This is from July 19th of 2015. Of course, Dorado Shootout at Palmas de Cortez, an annual event every year. And Don was famous for winning 2 years in a row with a pretty small fish, like 12, 15-pound Dorado. But he won nonetheless. So here they are, Mr. Jimmy Kingsmill, about binoculars.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup on the Mighty 1090. What a fun show today, man.
Yeah, we're going to have some fun. Our good buddy, Captain Jimmy Kingsmill. Good morning, Jimmy.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you, man. We were talking big tuna before the show here, and you've been on that. Our listeners got to see on our Facebook page last week, you with Greg Chase on a couple of biggins.
Yeah, well, those were nice ones, you know, some 70-pounders. And
yeah, it's like, hey, nice ones, yeah.
Well, for my lack of finding swordfish, having to resort to looking for some big tuna, you know, it's kind of falling into play.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of it around. It's just trying to get it to bite, right?
Yeah, you know, early on it was showing like crazy, and the numbers of big tuna around were just unreal. Just the 200-pounders jumping around, you just blowing your mind. You know, I hadn't seen it in years.
It's crazy when you stop and think about what is going on, you know, the size of tuna and how close it is to home that you can leave in the morning, you're fishing right. I mean, it's right there. It's right off the beach. And it's crazy that that size of fish is on our coast right now.
Yeah, no, it's amazing with the, you know, the quality is just, you know, 50-pound yellowfin, 70-pound yellowfin. It's just unheard of.
You've been fishing a long time. You grew up with it in Dana Point. Have you ever seen anything like this?
You know, I haven't. You know, as a little kid fishing out in front of barn kelp and seeing, you know, big bluefin rolling around and seeing the net boats come and mop it all up and it's gone and we never catch a thing. But, you know, that was, gosh, I was a kid.
Yeah.
That's cool, too. That's cool.
Today, it's a legitimate chance for somebody to catch a trophy fish right off the coast.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Unreal.
You just have to put your time in.
Put your time in and look for the right school of fish. You know, this foamers are coming up, and if you see a 40 or 50 pounder, you just go to the next school because
the key is looking, and that's one of the things we're talking about. And those of our listeners that have heard you here on the show before know that you are the binocular expert. You are the Fraser Optic representative for Southern California, I guess for the whole west side.
Yeah, right? Gyro Pros. That's
gyropros.com. And you have been turning people on to gyroscopic binoculars, and then they figure it out and they go, whoa, how did I do without this for so long?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. You know, we had back in 1993, we had a scenario where the Russian military surplus, you know, flooded the market, and I had a guy tugging on Mike Beek the Hurt, tugging on his shoulder, saying, "Hey, you got to try these things out." And then the guy handed them to Beek, and he said, "Here, Jim, try these things out.
Check these out."
Yeah, and we pulled up on a sleeper. I shouldn't say we pulled up. We were several hundred yards away from a sleeper, and I was screaming at him to stop because we were going to run it over. And I go, "Oh, right where that bird just dipped. He's sleeper right there." And he goes, "What bird?"
That's so cool.
I pulled the glasses down, and, you know, there's a bird, you know, 300 yards away. I guess, okay, we got to run up a little bit.
Yeah.
It took a while to figure it out, but, oh, my gosh, what a game changer.
I think that's one of the things trying to getting used to having a pair of the Fraser bylights is that you don't realize how far away they are until you pull the glasses down and go, oh, geez, we better go. We got to run on this thing.
Yeah.
Because you can see things literally 2 miles away, right?
Miles. You know,
we're
spotting bird schools at 8 miles.
8 miles.
Yeah, no problem at all.
Well, think about with tuna fishing the way that it gets. What I mean, just like comprehending what that, you know, what we're saying there for a second. I mean, when you're looking for a tern, you know, a bird that literally fits in your hand. It's smaller than a football, you know, and when the entire day is made on you being able to see those or not. And I mean, you can see a spot of terns that are picking on a school of tuna from 4 miles away. I mean, it's such a huge advantage to be able to see. It's the difference between seeing it and driving to it and catching a fish or just not.
It's giant. Hey, before we talk more about finding fish, catching fish, and all that, let's go down and get a report from Palmas de Cortez. Of course, the big Dorado shootout yesterday. And look who's on the line, the team captain for Team Baracho, Mr. Don Souther. Good morning, Don.
Hey, good morning. Hola, amigos.
Hola, amigos. Okay, I know you have the phone in one hand. Do you have a red cup in the other?
Yeah, I got a red cup in the other one. Don't worry about it. I've already had a couple of those rippies.
Just making sure.
Anyway, let me give you...
You wouldn't be holding up the Team Baracho if you didn't, right?
Sure, he's the captain, for gosh sakes.
Yeah.
Well, I was a captain, but, you know, Steve, my buddy, is the guy that ended up catching the winning fish. Believe it or not, have you ever had $400 a pound sushi?
No.
We got a 12.9 pounds, and we won it all.
What?
I cannot believe it.
What? Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Team Baracho won the Dorado shootout?
We won the Dorado. We won the truck. We won the side pod.
No
we
way.
Did good.
No
we did a good shake out here yesterday.
It was
just unbelievable. We were sitting there going, there ain't no way this fish is going to win, and we did.
How big was it?
Well, 12.9 pounds.
No, that was the biggest Dorado?
Second place was 12.8 pounds.
Oh,
my God. Those poor guys.
Wow. Congratulations, Don. That is unbelievable.
Awesome.
It's all your fault, Pete. You told me to shove ice down his throat, and I did.
That made the difference, huh?
Wow, that's crazy.
That's
well, good for you guys. Congratulations.
Don. So, Don, what did you win? How much cash and prize? I know you won a truck. What's the total?
We don't know. We got a little bit drunk last time, so we're not sure how much we won. The truck was probably $40,000. Side pot's another $10,000-$15,000. We don't know.
Nice job, man.
Wake me up later and I'll tell you.
Yeah, I got that fine. Oh, Don.
Still celebrating.
You're a character. Well, that's fantastic. What boat were you fishing on?
We were on the Bite Me.
On the Bite Me. All right.
Wow,
one of the
awesome,
Palmas de Cortez boats.
We fished that boat about 3 or 4 times, you know, coming down here. And I'll tell you what, great crew. I just love this place anyway. Even if we wouldn't have won, which is great. Just sitting here we're sitting on a patio now, the sun shining down, beautiful weather, unbelievable.
Life is good.
I know they had a side pot for Wahoo. What was the big Wahoo?
I think the Wahoo was about 37 pounds, if I'm not wrong.
Nice.
I didn't get it. You know, once I heard we won, we didn't care. After that, yeah, it's over.
And so there were over 100 boats in the tournament, right?
Yeah, they sure were. Yeah, there were about 110 boats, somewhere around there. You know, just a fun time, though. Everybody had a great time. You know, the Van Warmers do such a great job down here in Palmas. It's unbelievable. I've been coming here, like I say, for almost 30 years. I love it. I just love this
it's,
place.
I love it, too. It's such a great place, and the Van Warmers do such a fantastic job. Does that mean now you have enough money to come down and be at our 21st annual Palmas de Cortez Fall Spectacular on October 8th.
Well, we're thinking about it. Yeah, we'll be there.
Yeah, of course you're going to be there. Well, Don, congratulations. Team Baracho, the winner of the Van Warmer Resorts Dorado Shootout at Palmas de Cortez. Congratulations, Don.
Yeah, that's awesome, Don. Nice going.
Appreciate the call this morning.
All right.
Appreciate that. I mean, I'm in shock.
Yeah, totally.
I'm sorry. I'm just in shock. I mean, Jimmy's kind of sitting going, hey, what the heck? If you knew Don and you knew his crew, they're great guys, and they're a lot of fun to fish with and just super good guys and a lot of fun. So congratulations to them. It just shows you, you know.
Everybody's got a shot.
Everybody's got a shot when you have one big fish, right?
Absolutely.
That's the deal. Indeed. Well, anyway, so back to talking about gyropros.com and Fraser Optics. I want to talk a little bit about the difference between – I get this question a lot. The difference between a pair of Bylights or Mariner gyropros, which are legitimate gyroscopic binoculars, and like a Stabiscope, a Fujinon Stabiscope, Nikon Stabiscope, something like that. What's the difference between those two?
Well, first of all, though, the Fraser's, it's a mechanical gyro. It's a ring, a steel ring that's spinning at super high RPM.
How fast?
Well, you 30,000 RPMs.
30,000 revolutions per minute.
That fast. That's crazy.
It's singing.
Wow.
It's absolutely singing. Anyway, the way to kind of analogize this is you take the front wheel of a bicycle and you hold the axle of the bicycle and you spin it as fast as you can, and then you got your hand on each end of the axle, and then try to bend that wheel as it spins. You can't, it's going to be stiff, it's going to hold itself steady. Mm-hmm. And so when you have a gyro, that's the gyro spinning, it's on an axis, and then what happens is when we talk about caging and uncaging the gyro, well, you, a caged gyro is going to be when your hands are on both sides of the axle. You're holding it, it's caged, it's locked down. And so basically what happens when you uncage the gyro, and what's connected to it is all the prisms and your optics are all connected to that gyro. And so when you uncage the gyro, you let go one side of the axle, and then now you're free floating.
Wow.
And okay. That will hold steady. You can literally do that with a bicycle. Yeah. Take the front wheel off your 10-speed, spin it as fast as you can, hold it.
Hold on to both sides.
Hold on to both sides, let go of the other side, and it'll stay up. It'll stay up. And so give that a try. And
that's a mechanical
analogy.
Gyro.
That's a mechanical. That's, the inertia is holding it steady. Okay. Whereas, like a Nikon, what that is it's electronic. It's delaying what you're seeing. There's a split second of you're seeing an image. It's stable. You're holding it steady with your hands. And then when you bump or wiggle or move and then you come back to the object that you're focused on, the computer's delaying the image that you see so you think it's being stabilized. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it's basically processing the image, and then it's trying to, counter what you're doing, and it's showing you an image, a fraction of a second later that is still.
So it works.
Canon makes it still.
It's like the stabilization on your camera.
On your camera, yeah.
Same,
a Canon makes
same
it.
Technology.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like so the difference between a 14 power Bylight Stabiscope and a Techno Stabi.
Yep.
And the two. So the power is the same. I mean, a 14 is a 14, right?
Yes, 14 power.
14 by 40 is 14 power. But the difference is the way
it stabilizes. Right.
The one is enhanced. The other one is stabilized.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There you go.
So that would be kind of a analogy because you look, and they're like less than half the price of a gyroscopic binocular.
Yeah.
And if that's what you can afford, that's better than nothing, right?
It's better than nothing.
It's better.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it works.
Right. Just don't try any of your buddy's gyros.
Yes.
Because you won't go back to this.
Yeah.
Exactly. It is less than half the price, which is awesome. And like you say, if that's what you can afford, that will make a world of a difference. But it is also considerably less than half of the performance. It's not – they're just not comparable between the two. They're awesome when you're looking through that and you're going through your field glasses. But then when you pick up a pair of Frasers, there is the difference is it's not even measurable. It's so much.
How about a good pair of 7x50s? Really nice pair of 7x50s. That's a good thing to have on your boat, right?
It's better than nothing.
Yeah.
But you'll never pick up another pair up once you have gyros.
Unless you want to see stuff that's real close.
Well, you just won't pick them up.
I can agree with that because I have a pair of both. And I'm telling you, the gyros, my Bylights are in the hands all the time.
Yeah, it's an investment. It's a lifetime investment. You're going to have them forever.
Yeah.
And amazing things will happen when you have them.
The way I say it to people is that if you're really serious, we're spending several hundred bucks every time we go fishing and fuel and equipment and all that stuff. If you're really serious about catching fish on your own boat, these are an absolute must tool. It's as important as your meter, maybe more important in some ways, right? Would you go fishing without your fish finder? Would you go fishing without your GPS?
If you're offshore fishing,
yeah.
There's two things that I'd have. Is number one, a GPS, chart plotter,
right.
And gyros. That's all you need. Yeah. You don't need a fathometer. Yeah,
you could trade your up and down all day long for a pair of gyros. No question.
So why?
Well, I mean, you could if you're kelp patty fishing and bird fishing, you don't even need a GPS, you know, a compass to get you back to the harbor and a pair of gyros, and you're going to catch it up.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, like this kind of conditions that we have now, one of the hardest things to see is the terns on a gray morning, gray background, and when they're flying. And generally, the only time you're going to see with naked eye the tern schools is when it's already too late. The fish are already foaming and the birds are going. Whereas in the gray, you're going to be able to find the bird in the gray, and what you see is a tern hauling ass, basically, and you go to where he's flying, and then there it is, the fish.
There they are,
and that's what you can't see with the naked eye.
Yeah, that's indeed. So now you, of course, Jimmy, been on the dream team with Steve Lasley, Pete Grosbeck, the richest prize money, not quite. Equaling Don Souther's, maybe. I don't know about all that. But the richest prize money in the history of sport fishing down at the Bisbee, right?
Yes, absolutely.
How much was the prize?
It was $3.9 million.
And you were part of that dream team.
It was awesome.
Yeah, catching that fish.
Yep.
And, of course, you've been a professional captain. You're a swordfish captain. You go out. These things, how do you equate, like, the days before gyroscopic binoculars and today? I mean, is it kind of like before cell phones and after cell phones kind of thing, or what?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, when we had 7x50s and we were looking for marlin, you know, his primary focus was the billfish, and you used to use those, and the only time you could use them was going downswell, and we'd look for Taylor's downswell, and, you know, we'd find fish. There was a lot more fish back in the day, but now you have gyros. Now you actually find more fish going upswell than you do downswell because you're, you know, the marlin's tailing downswell, and you're looking upswell. You're covering twice the speed. You know, that fish is doing 5 or 6 knots, and then you're doing 7.5 knots the opposite direction. So you're covering 12, 13 knots of water, and it's just unbelievable the difference.
How many more fish?
Oh, yeah. And when we had the gyros and Steve's driving the boat, he could almost time when he knew where the school was. He'd put me in the proper position with based on glare and how far you can look with a gray background versus a sunlit background. And there's all kinds of facets to it. But he could almost tell the guy downstairs when
Jim's going to find one in about 3 more minutes. Right, get ready.
We actually made in the Bad Company boat, we actually put a lightweight fighting chair on top of the hard top. And that was my
pedestal. That was your mount.
Yep, because you didn't want any obstructions, any tower legs, antennas, anything to get in your way. Because when you're tracking a tailor, it's super hard to track a tailor because they go down.
Always fun hearing Captain Jimmy and his knowledge there. And, of course, Don, what a crack-up he is from Team Baracho. Anyway, here's one from the past, too. This is from not that long ago, February 17th of 2018. Our dear friend Kevin Kelly from West Coast Marine. We lost Kevin this past year, and a real loss to the community. Kevin was such a kind-hearted gentleman and sold a lot of boats and made a lot of people happy with Parker Boats and Yamaha Outboards out of West Coast Marine. Now, his son and family are still carrying on the tradition, the West Coast Marine places, and selling Parker Boats and Yamaha Outboards, as well as doing fantastic service. So please enjoy Kevin Kelly from West Coast Marine.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hook Up on the Mighty 1090. Going to be a fun day today talking about my favorite boat.
Indeed. Parker Boats, Kevin Kelly, Yamaha Outboards. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, great to have you in the studio. Parkers are taking Southern California by storm, would you say?
Great. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Again. Yep. There's more and more out there every day.
Yeah. And you're responsible for that.
Well, for the last 8 years, maybe. Yeah.
You work very hard and represent the product very well. They must be very proud of you back there.
I think so. We did a good job last year for the Parker Marine folks, and so we're looking to do the same thing. Now, all you just got to do is get enough boats in.
Yeah. Well,
that's they're taking longer to get because there's more demand for them.
Yeah, for sure. You just can't get enough inventory.
Right now, it's hard. Where they were 2 months build time, now they're out to 4 or 5 months build time.
Wow. Yeah. So if you want one by May, you got to order it.
You get in there now.
Yeah.
Come and get them now because we're taking them off the stock order list and taking deposits on boats that are going to be built in April and May.
you know what's coming.
I know what's coming.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so you can dial somebody in on the right boat for them and just say it'll be here in some
exactly. Whether 2320 or 2520s I have on order that are being produced in intervals, and right now the latest ones or the earliest ones will be May, and then they're going to stretch out even further than that.
So why don't you describe the third part model for Southern Cummins for our listeners? That
The most popular one is that 2320, is the pilot house, 23-foot pilot house boat, and then next is probably the 2520, the pilot house.
What kind of power do you put on each one of those?
The 23, we're pretty much hanging 300 horsepower Yamahas exclusively, and on the 25s, twin 200s.
Wow.
Both are the
inline four.
Inline four, both are all those engine options are the XCA engines, which are the digital shift engines, which lend themselves to a second steering station if you want to go big and go tower type of thing. And then they break down into the center consoles, which, you know, are the 23s and the 25s. Again, those are the most popular.
Like what you have, 25 yeah. Center console.
And the 18, you know, the old tried and true 18.
Yep.
Those are the most popular. And this year, the new 2320s, which are the pilot house, have a new transom on them with a pass-through door.
Oh, cool.
Like the 25s had last two or three years, uh-huh. Like Ricky pulled that great big tuna through the door on his boat. Now the 23s have that as a standard feature.
It is so
that
nice.
That big pass-through tuna door on the transom.
So these are bracket-mounted outboards with a pass-through door?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes.
Lends you very easy access to the bracket. I mean, we find us using that all the time, not just for easy entry into the boat, you know, via the slip if you keep it in the water, which is the easiest, but, I mean, access to the bracket, sometimes walking fish around, sometimes we have four or five things going at the same time, and a guy will get out there. That's a great feature. I'm stoked to hear they're going to be on the 23s. Guys are going to love it.
That's standard.
That's cool. Standard.
Fantastic. So, what kind of options are you looking at when you get a boat?
The ones that I order for stock are typically going to have the bow pulpit with a high bow rail,
okay.
A windlass, and I get the venting window on the port side of the 23, and a couple other things that make life easier, like the position indicators for the trim tabs.
That'd be sweet.
Have the lights on the side of the rocker switches to tell you
how
where
much tab you have or don't have.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sweet.
And sometimes the cockpit combing pads to lean up against. You know, pretty basic stuff, but...
And these are all factory options.
These are factory options.
When they build the boat in North Carolina?
North Carolina.
North Carolina, yeah.
Yeah, those are the factory options that I typically get on boats that I order for stock. And that's what... Other people, when they order their own boat, that's kind of the direction that they go also. Some of them will get the shock-absorbing seat, which is a nice option. And then there's a folding seat against the transom, which is another nice thing that you can, you know, add a couple of extra seats in the back of the boat. And it folds up and out of the way.
I can just say, for being a customer from Kevin and going through that exact process, I just cannot... I cannot appropriately describe how easy he made that. And, I mean, Kevin brought up, you know, options that we didn't know we wanted, like those, you know, like the trim tabs that you're talking about, and also talked us out of things that, like, hey, you know, that's not right for you. You're going to do whatever. I already know you. You're going to do a custom this, so you don't want this seating style. You're going to want this and that. You know, I mean, he just knows how a West Coast boat is supposed to be, and talked us out of some, talked us into others, and the way the boat came because of his guidance made it perfect. I mean, and they just make it so easy. It was it was a fantastic experience buying our boat from West Coast.
Because Kevin knows what you need and what you don't need.
Exactly.
You've done it long enough that you know.
Yeah, seen enough of them built right and not so right.
And fished on them.
Yeah.
And fished on them. And you know, typical thing is that Parker offers rod holders on the roof. You know, their rocket launcher was 6 rods.
Exactly.
That doesn't work. That's kind of useless.
Yeah. Well, that's good for one guy. Now, how about the other passengers?
Yeah. So we don't order the rod holders on the roof, nor the deck lights on the spreader lights on the rod holder, because it just creates more holes in the deck, and we just, you know, add them to the rocket launcher that we build out here. We might have 15 rods on it, or more.
So you have a custom fabricator build specifically what works out here,
mm-hmm,
with 15 rod holders and a deck light and the whole deal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's done at your shop.
And those are done at our shop, and we have, you know, the patterns for the different rod holders, whether it's on a 2320 or a 2520, and then we put on nice big LED deck lights.
Ooh, nice.
For the you know, on the rocket launcher itself.
Yeah.
So there's just things that we've learned over time.
Oh, yeah.
And battery, you know, situations where we're adding one more battery and making a house bank and then separating it with a special battery switch. So those are totally isolated, and where it's a house bank and an engine bank, and your bait tank runs off of your house and your electronics running off of that. Your engine is totally separated. You can combine them if you get into trouble and need to start the engine, but, you know, nothing like having more battery power.
Guy can be out sea bass fishing all night, not worry about running his bait tanks and his electronics and whatever, and if you stayed up longer and you drained, it's all good. When you go to fire that motor off, you got to...
Yeah, if you're on a super long, you know, 6-8 hour drift out there or something...
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, you got your house bank and your... engine's always got a hot battery.
No worries about that at all.
Yeah,
that's cool. So when you order a Parker, okay, let's say, okay, somebody comes up to Fred Hall, Long Beach, say, are there special incentives, or it's just like your incentive is you're going to get it?
No,
which is pretty good incentive the way the fishing season's been the last couple of years.
Yeah, no, I'm still able to pass along some discounts on the ordered boats. Yeah.
Okay.
Not getting greedy by any means. No. There is a supply and demand.
That's not you.
No.
Yeah.
There's a supply and demand equation here, but no, we're fair, and you know, boat you can order, and it's just going to take 5 months to get.
Yeah.
Or we can pick one out of the lineup that I have, you know, already ordered, and put your name to it. Mm-hmm. Just a deposit. Put your name to it, and you know, when it gets here, and we outfit it like you want.
There you go.
Because you have a steady stream of boats coming in regardless, and so not every one of those has been spoken for already.
Not all of them.
Okay.
But the list is getting thin.
Yeah. So. So bait tanks. Let's get back to bait tanks.
Uh-huh.
Do you have those factory installed in North Carolina, or they come out here?
No, we do them out. We do them out here.
You do real bait tanks out here.
Real bait tanks.
Yeah.
Now the Parker bait tanks that they do have on these two boats that we're mainly concentrating on here right now, they do have a bait tank in the port side transom.
Yeah,
and your boat. And it works.
It does.
It works. I mean, it's good to hold those Modellos nice and cold, or squid, or a mackerel, or something. I'm gonna put a scoop of sardine in there.
Yeah.
But you know, we add another bait tank, a nice big oval bait tank on the deck, and appropriate size, and that's how you really are gonna. Keep your bait alive, and you got the other one as backup.
What we love about that transom tank is on days when we're planning on, we use our boat a ton for short runs. Go after work, we're going to fish a few hours, and we're lucky enough to keep our boat in the water at Dana Landing, and we have a little receiver with mackerel in there. We're going out for an afternoon to surface iron yellowtail fishing, not planning on using bait, but you're not ever going to go without the option of it, and rather than putting 80 gallons worth of water weight on the boat, we just pull the, you know, fill the transom tank up. We throw in a half a dozen or more mackerel. Those live absolutely all the time, and I can assure you they do, because 9 times out of 10 they go right back into the receiver just as happy as when they went out. So
It's a great addition.
Wasn't that fun hearing Kevin again? Boy, I miss that guy. Anyway, that wraps it up for 2023 start here on our January 1st pre-recorded show here on Let's Talk Hookup. We'll be back live next Saturday and Sunday. Next Saturday, Captain Brandon Hayward from Bite Sport Fishing, always a popular guest, really a fantastic guy. And then next Sunday is John Ireland from Rancho Leonero. Thanks for listening today. Happy New Year to everybody, and we'll see you right back here next Saturday and Sunday on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio and the Let's Talk Hookup.